Potato world, a world of virtual people. I guess. Would love to see some real people here and there. Oh well.
Has Richie done the Havdalah yet? Is he here?
I think he had a rather late night.
I mean, we need him first off for our first mission.
We usually start right off without an introduction on the first mission. But it would have been nice, I admit. Well, looks like nobody's going to actually come in here. How do you do a dance, like, with virtual people? A lot of challenges here. Okay, Rabozai. Today's Daphnis Sechet Chulin brought to you from Eretz and the Tevor Chavah is Daf Nun Tet. We're holding in the Halakha Mishnah on Nun Chet Amud Beit. Now we're getting into some very different types of treifas that we haven't spoken about before. And let's see what things may be mutter, mishum tarfus, but usser anyway. Achuzat adam. So let's say that you have an animal that is sick. What the Gemara calls achuzat adam means that it's high blood pressure, it's having trouble breathing. Hameushenet. It was an animal that inhaled a lot of smoke, and that affected its internal organs. Hamitsunenet. It has a cold. She'ochla hardufni. It ate hardufni, which is generally taken to be oleander, which is for chayot, is considered to be a real poison. Or she'ochot sorat tanigolim. If it ate guano, it's supposedly, again, supposed to be fatal for certain types of mammals. So the bovines are affected by that. Or she'shata mayim haraim. It had water that was left open, or that had, we know, you know, could have had a snake that had actually put poison into it. In all of these cases, it is kosher, and we don't need to be concerned for tarfus. So just because something we saw before, the din of a misukenet, we could have animals that are on the verge of dying in afal pikin, they're not included in tarfus. Maybe included in the din of misukenet that we found that Yechezkel was very careful about. And he was a mishabeach himself that he never ate kos, which means shecht it as fast as you can. So this is, there's a line, and it's interesting, there's a line in the Out of Africa where, she's describing the Mohammedans. So she says that if they ever would see a dying animal, they would all rush to cut its throat because otherwise they wouldn't be allowed to eat it because it would have a din of an avela. It's like as long as it was still alive, you know, somehow or other. So they'll eat it. In all of these cases, it can actually be eaten and there's no limitations due to a sakana for humans either. But suppose it ate something that was poisonous for humans. It was Yochlas Anamonet. Or it was actually bitten by a snake. And then it would be, its meat would actually have in it human poison. So it was Kisha Nachash. Again, in all of these cases, there's no din of tarfus either. It's Mutarat Mishum Trefa. But in that case, since the human may ingest something which is poisonous to humans, there it would be Osir Mishum Sakanat Nefeshot. Omar Shmu, if you force down Hilita, means that you push down its throat a Hilkit, it would be Trefa. Now, what exactly that is, I don't know what the Hilkit is. It's actually a lot of discussion among the Rishonim. I never knew what Asafotita is anyway, so some of them will bring that it's Asafotita. I'm pretty sure what that is. But we've looked it up and discussed it before, and I never felt that I really understood what it was in practical terms. And that type of thing is extremely sharp. And my taima minakfor leilema anayu, it actually causes a puncture to the bnei me'ayim, in which case it would be getter a nekuva. Therefore, it would be treifa because it's incipient nekuvas. Masav Rav Shizma, you say that the Ahuzas Dam is kosher, but we have a brayta that seems to say otherwise. What is that? אחוז הזה אדם והמאושנת ושאוכל הרדופני ושאוכל צורת תרנגולים. All of the cases that were listed here. ושתת מים הרעים. הלעית תיאה. So here it adds תיאה, which it didn't mention before, and the Gemara is going to talk about what exactly is it. Chiltis we had, and pilpulin, or ochel sam hamavas, it's kshira. Hikisha nachash, or shenashcha kelav shatas. So it's an interesting additional cases over here. So if it was bit by a rabid dog, that includes rabid cats maybe, huh? Muteret mishum trefal, the asura mishum sakanat nefashot. So what's the problem? Well, the problem is chiltit, because the Braita says it includes the chiltit with the cases of kshera mitam tarfas. So kasha chiltis achiltis, because the Braita says it doesn't make a trefa. Shmuel says that it did. And kasha sam hamavet asam hamavet. And what about our Mishnah that says sam hamavet would be also to eat, and here it says you can actually eat sam hamavet, and the animal that ate sam hamavet. Answers the Gemara, chiltit, on Shmuel's chiltit is no kasha, because in the Braita we're talking about alim, the alim of the chiltit plant, although they're very bitter, but they're not going to cause in the kuva and the bnei me'ayit. Masha inkin, what Shmuel was talking about was the krotim, which themselves are extremely sharp, and they can cause a physical nekuva. What about the spirit of the Mishnah about sam hamavet? Well, it's also no problem, because sam hamavet as sam hamavet lo kasha. When the Braita spoke about sam hamavet and says that it's mutter to eat it, that's talking about sam hamavet to animals. Masha inkin, what we were talking about in the Mishnah, we were talking about something which is sam hamavet to humans, and there it was also to eat because it's sakana. Wait a minute. We have the case of sam hamavet for behema. We have hardufni. So why would we say sam hamavet? Sam hamavet's a behema, hainu hardufni. You try, it's true. But hardufni is something that is known, identifiable, maybe not are all aware that that is considered to be the equivalent of sam hamavet for behema. So we must trade gavne, sam hamavet. They're two different types. Anyway, you mentioned in the Braita a new thing, which was tia. I'm not quite sure what that is. My tia. Omer of Yehuda, it's the Ikara de Merirta, which I don't know either, unfortunately. It's a certain type of plant where the roots are actually poisonous, and it mentions it. Again, you need to have a real Bakias. And Rashi brings a French meaning to it, but I don't know what exactly what that is. Omer of Yehuda. You should know that this chiltit stuff is not very good for humans to eat either. If you eat three weights, a takle is a shekel, normally, it means literally weight. But the common weight, well, the basic weight was the shekel. So you ate three shekels worth of the chiltit, and you ate it on an empty stomach. So then you're going to end up mishtaleach mashrit. You're going to end up losing your skin. Doesn't mean mamish literally, but it means that you'll end up being so, you'll have such an allergic reaction that you'll end up scratching off your skin for all intents and purposes, is what the Rishonim explained it actually means. Omer Rabbi Abo, I had a case like this. So I ate one shekel worth of tiklin. Remember, we call it tiklin chavitin. Those are shkolin. So one tikli, one shekel weight worth of kiltit, not three. And I can tell you something, if I hadn't gone into the swimming pool right away and sat in cold water, that would have happened to me. Bishtalach mashkoi, v'kiyamti ba'atzmi, ha'chokhmat chaye ba'aleha. As Shlomo HaMelech says, people who have wisdom and they know, I should say wisdom, but knowledge. So they have medical knowledge or whatever it is that they have about the world that allows them to relate to the world in a way that actually can save their life. And this is what happened to me. God only knows what I was going through with that allergic reaction to that stuff. Whew. My gosh, it was almost as bad when I ate peanut butter. Om Rav Yosef, hai man da ocher shitzre beiv. Now, if you want to know how to commit suicide, here's a good way to commit suicide. So all you need to do is eat 16 eggs and 40 nuts, harboyam guzi, and 3 butita de pirche, which is the caper, and then finish it up with a revi'ez halug of pure honey. Now do this in the middle of the summer with an empty stomach and misaker talye libe. Let me tell you something. You're talking about heart palpitations. This is palpitating right out of your chest. There was this deer, very cute little deer. It comes to the Resh Galusa's house, and its back legs had been cut. Did somebody cut off the legs? Anyway, the question was whether maybe it was a treifa because of the Tzemes Hagidim. So Rav was baiting at the Tzemes Hagidim and saw that it was kosher, and he was makshir, and he wanted to eat some of this, and it should be bu'umtza. Bu'umtza is just it's like a South African braai. You know, it's basically raw. So a little bit of salt and just a brief time on the barbecue, and that's how he wanted to eat it. So Shmuel said to him, aren't you chayshish that maybe there was something wrong with this leg? It had rotten away, you know, because it was bit by a snake that was poisonous, and maybe that would mean that this is an animal that is actually a sakana, like the Mishnah says. It's a sakana to eat it if it was itself bit by a poisonous snake. So why aren't you chayshish? So is there something to do? I mean, what do you mean every time you have to worry about that? Is there a way that you could do a bedika? Maita kante. So Shmuel said to him, notve betanura, instead of eating it like the way you wanted to, put it into an oven and make a roast out of it. And that is the best way to check it. It will check itself. And if there's something wrong with it, you will very rapidly find out. So sure enough, Rav puts it in the oven. And nafal tilche, it actually degenerated into little tiny pieces. It was a mess. It was obviously not normal meat. Kari Shmuel alei de Rav. So Shmuel said, oh, look how HaKadosh Baruch Hu protects Rav. I was there when he was going to eat this. Lo yu nevet tzadik kol oven. No, nothing wrong could happen to such a big tzadik. And Rav said about Shmuel, oh, what was said about Daniel, kol roz lo anislos, there's not a secret in the world that is beyond you. Now, we need to turn to Doc. But Doc apparently joined up with Richie. This is terrible. What do we do? Rich, are you hiding behind the scenes? I'm telling you, Finland and the Baltic has swallowed our captain. Zohar, Helek, and Mishnah. Now we are moving on to a new area of Elu Treifas. And it is time for us to learn the basic simonim of Behemais, Chayais, Eifais, Dugim. Now you show up, Richie. Chagravim. You came just in time. We were
Rabbi, up. When you do Havdalah at 1:30 in the morning.
That's early, Rich. I said it was 3.
And you spend the next hour and a half going over the news of the long day before. You gotta give allowances.
Richie, going over an hour and a half of news from the long day before requires a full week of recovery. I'd advise you to close your connection and go back to bed immediately.
And that's already history, not news. Why?
I don't understand. I don't understand why you go to Finland to commit suicide. It's just as easy to hear the news here.
Addictions are addictions.
Okay. You know, I have a son who specializes in addictions. I can refer you.
son-in-law who makes smoothies.
Send him to visit me with a little package of his magical stuff, and I'll be happy to do the cure here.
Well, all he does is switch one addiction for another, so I don't know how much it's going to help.
That's what life. That's what life is about.
Okay. Come, give us an intro.
Oh.
You think you're Doc? Give us a Richie intro.
I'm a little late. I'm not quite sure where I am, you know. It takes a while to get used to it.
Simonei be'imah v'chayah nemru min haTorah. So there are some things that are beferish in the pasuk, and those are the main simonim of what constitutes kashrus in determining the sign of a species. So when it comes to a behemah and a chayah, now it's very important to note that there's a major difference between a behemah and a chayah, which means that we're going to have to actually have a simonim to identify the difference between a behemah and a chayah. And what is that important difference? That is the question of whether the chelev is mutter or usser. On a behemah, which is shayach to be brought on the mizbeach, so on all of the chelev of such a behemah that is meant for the mizbeach, the Torah gave an iser kares for achila, even if it's not a korban. But a chaya, which is never brought on the mizbeach, those same pieces of fat are completely kosher. So as far as the kashrus of the species are concerned, that is in the Torah. But when it comes to a bird, the Torah doesn't list what it makes a bird in terms of simonim. How can you identify a kosher bird versus a non-kosher bird? All that the Torah provides is a list of 24 different birds which were baked into a... 24 different birds, which are all the birds that were tafe. So anything else, if you know those 24 birds, then any other bird that you find is tahar. Of course, it could be a subspecies of those 24 birds, but if in total you are personally familiar with 1,673,141 different birds, then you would have no trouble in eating birds. If you're very hungry. But these simonim for birds, the Chachomim did give simonim, to enable you to generally identify birds in most areas where you would be able to know that this is kosher. So first of all, kol of hadores tame. If a bird is dores, now this is the big issue. What exactly is dores? There's a lot of different approaches among the Rishonim. So there's actually two different virushim that Rashi gives in two different places, because here, in the early part of the circuit, later on Rashi, a couple of days from now, we'll talk about Rashi, but here Rashi says that the meaning of the of hadores is that it picks up its food and it brings it to its mouth. It doesn't just peck at something that's on the ground. Later on, Rashi's going to say that the of puts its foot, its claw, on the food that it's eating, and it eats it by pressing on it. So over there could be even on the ground. But there is other pshatim as well. Some say that it means that it catches the food in midair and eats it. Some say that it means that it is dores, literally, the same way that we have the drisa, meaning that it's a bird of prey and it attacks with its claws and it inserts them into its prey, like an eagle. Anyway, so that would be one simon. If it's dores, then it's vadai tame. This is the famous story of the Shalah. The Shalah and all of his descendants refused to eat turkey for very good reasons. I mean, we don't have any kind of misera on a turkey, and basically we're sort of relying on its being, because it looks sort of chickeny. I mean, I don't know why in the world people eat turkey, but in any event, so it supposedly saw a drisa, a turkey, being dores. But, I mean, the type of drisa is not necessarily a type of drisa everybody is masking to. But anyway, all followers of the Shema won't eat turkey because of that, because we really don't have a Misera, that it's one of, maybe it's one of the 24 birds that we don't haven't identified. Anyway, so that's simen number one. If it's Dores, it's Tomei. If it has an Etzba Yetera, and it has a Zefek, and it has the type of kurkavan that has two layers of skins that are separable, you can peel one off of the other, then that is a simen that it's kosher. So now, what exactly is this Etzba Yetera? It's got an extra toe. Okay, so Rashi says it's got an extra toe that goes out towards the back. And that is, in fact, unusual. You've got these three toes in front, and then there's this extra toe comes out a little bit above, and that's in the back. Now, that's classic chicken. Masha'in came, according to the Rambam and other Rishonim, it means that its middle toe, not the one that's Etzba Yetera in the back, but its middle toe is particularly extended. And therefore, it isn't the type of bird that uses that toe for clawing. So it's extended. That's a simen of Tahira. So if it has all of those three things, as long as it is in Teres, it would be Kaish. Rebbe Elazar, Rebbe Tzadok, Omer, one thing you could be sure about, if it splits its claws into two, so in other words, it has two toes in back, two toes in front, like most non-kosher birds, so it'll sit, let's say, on a telephone wire, so it's got the typical stance on the telephone wire of two, like you see all over a chavya with the parrots, you know, they all sit there on the telephone wires. And that's because everybody's learning treifas. I'm telling you, since the last time we did Hela Treifas in Rechavia, the place has become overrun with parrots just for this one part of the Mishnah. So they sit there with two toes in one side of the wire and two toes on the other side of the wire.
But they're making long distance calls.
It's true.
And they're trying to stay current.
So that's a great sign of tumah. Now, next, let's talk about the chagavim. Let's talk about the grasshoppers or the locusts. Koshi Ishlo Araba Ragwai. So it's got four legs. Legs mean walking legs as opposed to jumping legs. It's got Araba Kanafayim. It looks like it's got two wings, but actually, if you look carefully, underneath those two wings are an additional two wings, which when it opens up, you can see that it has actually four different wings. And it also has Kartsulai. So besides the 4 feet, it's got those special jumping legs, which are called Kartsulai. And those, as you've seen them on grasshoppers, are very common. And it has another simen. It needs to have Kanafav Chofin et Lugbo. So the wings have to cover most of its body. So even if it had 4 wings and has these other simonim, if the wings don't go all the way down till it's the rove, that's not a type of kosher grasshopper. Rabbi Yossi Aymer, it doesn't help to have all of those arba simonim. The only ones that are kosher that have all those kind of simonim is the ones that we have a Kabbalah on, that its name is Chagav. Because it's only the chagav that the Torah lists is kosher, and therefore it's a way in which we know that these arba simanim are actually applicable. But otherwise, there are other minim in which these arba simanim are not a type of grasshopper that's kosher. This, of course, is the big problem of identifying today the kosher grasshoppers, because it's only the Moroccans and the Tamanim that have that Kabbalah, because basically the Ashkenazim and the European Sephardim, they weren't in places that they usually would find Chagavim anyway. And so they didn't have any simen, any Kabbalah on the name Chagav, and it went completely out of use. So this becomes now a major shaila. Can one group that does not have a Kabbalah and that has been noyeg for Doris not to eat these things, can they rely on a different group that came from a completely different area and rely on their Misera, or do they have to go according to Nahara Upashta? So that's a big machlokas. This is in terms of chagav. How about in terms of dagim? Dagim, kol sheyesh lo snapir, kekaskeset, whatever has, or what those things are, we'll explain in a moment. Whatever has snapir vekaskeset is, as it says in the Torah, beferish, lo shelo snapir vekaskeset. And that seems like it's saying even one single snapir and one single kaskeset. There's Rabbi Yehuda Eimer. No, it's shnei kaskasi, because kaskeset means a set of kaskasim. But it's true, if it has one snapir, that's enough. Which one is which exactly? Well, the kaskasim are the kivuimbo. Those are things that the fish cannot manipulate. They are just stuck on, and that the fish doesn't have any kind of shlita over it, where it's not pirin. That's what it uses to actually swim through the water. So the snapirin are the fins, which are that which it's potayach b'hem. Tana Rabban, here are the simonim b'pahim. It says, the feresh in the pasuk, which makes it very clear, that if you have the chol b'hema mafreset farsa v'shosat shesa, shtei pirasot ma'alat gira b'behima ota tochelo. So it's not enough that it should have a split hoof. It has to be shosat shesa. Shosat, it means like completely separated. Then if it's also a ma'ale gira, which b'pashtus means it chews its cud. But remember that the gira could also refer to re-chewing what it has already digested. So it's true that in English we call that ma'alat geira, means specifically a cud. But a cud needs to be formed into a cud by the Beit HaKosot Menach M.L. Don't you want to know what kind of salami and stuff is kosher and all of that? Okay, yeah, you wouldn't want to make any mistakes, you know, under the business. Yeah. Okay. So it's true that in English it means it chews its cud. However, it's not what it means in Lashon HaKodesh. Ma'alat geira means that it chews on that which has already gone through it. So in other words, let's say that it has to re-chew and re-digest the material that it has already formed into what we would have thought was fecal matter, and instead it needs to be eaten again in order for it to be digested, that would be called ma'ala geira. So because of that, what we call rabbits, which are certainly not chewing their cud, but, and hares, they actually have to reprocess their food, and therefore they're called ma'ala geira in Lashon HaKodesh. And therefore, anything which is ma'alat geira would be kosher, as long as it has split hoofs. So it has to also be mafreses parasa. And remember, split hooves mean shosa chesa. Now, there's animals that have split, they look like split hooves, because they have like two separate nails that come out at the bottom of their foot, but it's not shosa chesa because it doesn't go all the way up into the bone of the metatarsus. It's not part of the actual foot. And that would not be called shosa chesa, even though it's mafreset parsa. But you need to know one very important rule, which makes absolutely no sense, as if we're interested in whether the animal has teeth on the top of its mouth. I don't know. The Gemara is going to say, what the heck is this supposed to mean? Kol behima shemalat gera. Very important rule to know is that if it is a malat gera, then for sure it does not have teeth on the top of its mouth, and it's kosher, which is, first of all, wrong, and secondly, senseless. Who cares about teeth on the top? And this makes no sense at all, as I was going to point out. What is he talking about? And one thing is important to know is that when we use the word shinayim, shinayim means specifically teeth, that means incisor teeth. It does not refer to molars. So that is very important in about what we're about to discuss. So, Tana Rabban. So, Tamar is going to go over this. Elohim Simoni Behema, Kol Behema, Mafreset Parsa, Shosan Shesa, so on and so forth. So, Kol Behema Shema Lad Gira, The Brayta also says the same crazy thing. Biyadua she'en la shinayim lamala. So for sure, it doesn't have this serious problem of having teeth, upper teeth on the front. And therefore, it's kosher. Like as if we care about if it has teeth and we're all worried about whether it has teeth. And it's not even true. Says they want a kololohu? This is true. What about a gamal? A gamal is malad gira, and it does not have any teeth, and it is not tahar. It is specifically tameh, which is identified in the Torah as one of the minim of tmeim et agamal. So it's the one thing that it says it is not shosa at shesa, even though it does have, it's true. It looks like it shows Tachesa because all the way at the end, it has these very pointy nails that have a long bed, but the Shesa does not go all the way up the way it has to be in order for it to be shows Tachesa. So how can you say that any animal that doesn't have teeth up front is kosher? That's not even true. Yeah, but it's one thing is true. It may not have incisors, but it does have canine teeth. So it has nive, right? So we have three different types of teeth. It does have canines. And therefore, that's included in that halacha. So since it does have something there in the top of its, on the front of its mouth on top, it fits this sinin. Well, wait a minute. What about the ben agama? What about a camel, an immature camel? It does not have any nive. It's still nursing. Would not be a good idea for it to be nursing with nive. And those nive, they show up later on, obviously, the same way humans do, so that they can't bite their mother. We don't want everybody to be Esav. And what about a shafan? And what about the arnevet? How about those, which are generally translated as the rabbit and the hare, right? So the shafan and the arnevet are actually... I don't know, there's all types, as you know, all types of arguments what really is the correct translation. But in any event, it certainly is not what they call a cud, right? So, but the thing is, and I think my explanation is the simplest explanation. I don't know, people throughout the Deris have tried to explain this away since they have a three-part stomach, so they're considered to be malagera, or since they're constantly moving their mouth as if they're chewing their, you know, I think the answer is very simple. But anyway, the shafan varnevet, which are in the Torah, identify as malagera, and they certainly do have front teeth that are incisors, and they certainly are tummy. And anyway, what is this business about the teeth? Oh, shinayim, what are we talking about over here? Teeth. Why are we talking about teeth? It doesn't say anywhere in the Torah that there's a simon about teeth, and now you're telling me, oh, don't worry, it has the right kind of teeth. I can't believe I got actually half hypnotized by these words, and they have absolutely no marker. What's going on? You're right. We have it completely wrong. What we're looking at over here is a Mishnah that's giving us a way to identify whether something is malat gerah by checking the teeth. It's giving us additional information. What the Brayta really means is the opposite, that a behemoth that does not have shinayim lamala is one way to be sure that it is a ma'alat gera, because it basically has a plate against which it's chewing, and it has to crush it against that plate in order to be ma'alat gera, because it has that completely different type of digestive system that has to break down the cellulose. It doesn't do any good to cut through it. It has to be ground against like a mortar and pestle kind of thing, which is what it does. It uses these broad molars, which are in the back of the mouth, and in front, it only can grind up against this bony plate. And that is a simon for sure, that it's a ma'alat gerah, and anything that is like that is also mafreset parsa, which means that you would be able to know whether an animal is kosher by checking for these simonim and knowing the teeth. Now, obviously, we do know that there is one thing that doesn't fit this rule, which we asked before and which we're going to explain in a minute, and that is the ben gamal, because it's not kosher. And if you looked at it, you'd think that it was kosher. So obviously, this way of checking for kashrus is only going to work if you personally would immediately recognize a young camel, a ben gamal. If you don't know what a ben gamal looks like, then you could not identify for sure that this is a kosher animal. Well, I understand, but why do we need these extra simonim? I mean, why not just look at the feet, and then you'll know. Is it a mafreset parsash or sages or not? What do we need to see money in the mouth for anyway? I mean, basically, if you know what a pig looks like, then you would be able to determine whether this, as long as it's not a pig, so then we know that it's mafreset parsash or sages. It's only a pig which is going to look like it's kosher. That's the whole reason that we compare Esav to the piggy, right? Piggy's always waving its feet. Look how kosher I am. What is that called? Virtue signaling. So the pig started this from the very beginning to be virtue signaling. See me, I am completely kosher. And that's exactly what makes them the perfect simon for Esav. What an amazing... that really is amazing. The main characteristic of Esav is manazah. Anyway, so why not just check it? Because what happens in a case where you find an animal, you're very hungry out there in the desert, and its hooves have been cut off, and this is what Rav Chisda says. Let's say, Yom Rav Chisda, you're lost in the desert, and you find this animal that has its parasot cut off. You can check its mouth, and you can see. If there's no teeth in the front that are incisors, then be a duashi tohora. But if not, then be a duashi tmeya. But you can only base your determination of kashrus if you're personally familiar with the ben agamal, like Menachem Sklar is, and that's how he's able to, even in difficult circumstances, identify these animals. But here it says, Bivachiakir Gamal. And you don't have to be Makir the Gamal, because the Gamal, you would know if it has those canines, even though it Ari, you're getting as bad as Barnea, but that's definitely true. So you have to be Makir Gamal, but that's not true. The Gamal, you would be easily able to examine its mouth and see that it had those canine teeth, right? So why do you say Bovachi Akir Gamal, Gamal Nive Yiste? No, I meant, what Chisda was saying is, not the Gamal itself, but the Ben Agamal, which doesn't have Nive. And so you'd have to be sure, hey, I know what a camel looks like, and this is a camel. Well, you know, if you're ready to admit that there is one species called the Gamal, if it's young, the Ben Agamal, how do you know that there's not another 100,000 different species that have not yet even been recognized by science, and you're wandering through Peru, nobody knows what was there, and maybe there's another Nina Akrina, the Domina Ven Gamal. I mean, like, what makes you think you know every species? You're crazy. You know, like, a 1/10,000th of the species, and now you're walking around like you're a big bucky and a hachachmat t'chayeb alea, and now you're going to be eating all over the world. You know nothing. So what's going on? Ah, because, Los Alcadaita, you cannot entertain the notion that there are other species like this. The Tani Devei Rebbe Yishmael, notice that when the Pasuk talks about the Jamal, it talks about Et HaJamal Ki Ma'ale Geira, who? What do you say, who? Ki Ma'ale Geira. So, if it says who, it's coming to tell me this is the only species that is Ma'ale Geira and that is not Shosad Shesa. So this is, you can be sure that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is very familiar with all of the potentiality of Darwin. And therefore, Shavit Olamo Yodea, She'en Lecha Davar Ma'ale Geira V'tamei, Ella Jamal, there is nothing else. That's it, baby. And therefore, if you know what it looks like, you don't have to worry about anything. Obviously, this includes Shofan Bar Neves. That was said beferish together with the Jamal. V'fichach barat bo hakatuv hu. That's why it comes to tell me that besides what is currently listed in the Torah HaKadosha, there is nothing else that you need to worry about. And because of that, if you have these simonim, you know that this is not a gamal, then you don't have a problem. And another thing that Rav Chisda said, if you're traveling along the midbar, here you're traveling along the derech, because we're talking about a derech, because we figure you won't have any problems with piggies, you know, in Antarctica or anything. But if it's an area that you would normally be traveling in, you got to worry about piggies or different types of the pig family, boar or whatever. So you find this animal whose mouth was, maybe it was attacked, his mouth was eaten out. I have no idea whether it had front teeth or not. How am I supposed to know what this is? Well, you could look at its hooves. If you have the proper sedukot, of course, you know that it's kosher. But if it doesn't have the prosetas in your coat, then you know that it's not kosher. But this only works if you know what a pig is. Now, that means you don't only know what a specific pig is, you know what the pig would be like. So you can determine if something is piggy. So if it's piggy, maybe it's a hippopotamus. Oh, man, is that piggy. But that's also a pig. It's a boar. It's a pig. No, it's not. It doesn't matter. All of those things are included in the chazir, and it's only that family. That
Mr. Penning.
What? I'm sorry, you're trying to talk over an internet that's not working. Ubavachi akir chazir. But maybe there's something else besides piggies. Lav amarti ka chazir? Yikanami mina achrina de damyala chazir. How do you know that you can rely on this? There might be millions of things like this. No zalkadaita. The Tanya Devei Reb Yishmael. The Eta Chazir ki mafriz parsa. Who? We have the same who that is said in the one mean that's identified as having a mafreset parsa v'shosa chesa and not be a animal that's kosher because it is not actually chewing its geira. So this tells us the who, Shalit Balamo Yodea, She Elachadavashima Fris Parsa, but is nonetheless Tane Elachazir, which is why the Torah said, who? It's Dafka, this species, and its variants. Yom Rav Chisda, another thing, is if you're walking along in the wilderness, now what do you do? You don't have a mouth to look at, and you do not have a foot to look at. This animal's in pretty bad shape. So, the question is, can you shecht it and eat it? You have no way to know whether it is a behema that is tahira. There is a hidden way, and that is bodek bifsara. You need to take a look at its muscle fibers. And it depends how the muscle fibers are constructed. If the muscle actually goes, you have muscle that runs lengthwise, and you have muscle that runs crosswise. And it's like we're using the same words that we would for a weave. Then you know that it's kosher. We'll see what muscles we're talking about. But this is only if you personally know what it is that the arod looks like. An arod is generally translated as the wild donkey. So it's a feral donkey. It has that simen, and it is not kosher. But how do you know? Lav amrit ika arod. I mean, if you're ready, it doesn't say anything about this in the Torah, you know. We don't have a pasuk that says who. We don't have a shalit ba'olamo yodea. So how do you know? Lav ika arod. That is considered to be tame, even though it has these muscles, and you could identify the two directions of the muscle fibers. How do you know there isn't some other species that you're not aware of? Ikanami mina akrina de Daniel Arod. Ah, the point over here is that the Kabbalah that we have, a Misera of a Siman, is also reliable in exactly the same way as a Shalit Ba'olamo Yodea, because we have Gemire, we have a Kabbalah, that this Siman is true of every single kosher animal only, except for the Arod. So where do you look at? What we're looking at is Amar Abaye, the Itamer of Chista, we're looking at the Kanfei Ha'Oketz, which would be basically the two sides of its rear end. And that would be, there are muscle fibers there that run up and down and run in the other direction. The way to check it is that you simply cut it. It depends on which direction the muscle is going. I mean, if you can't look carefully enough, it's easy enough to see which direction the fibers are running. And every time you cut a muscle, when you're eating a piece of meat, you actually see that. You see which direction the fibers are. Here, you have both directions right there in the butt of the animal. And as long as you know what it is that this arod looks like, you would be able to even rely on a thing like that. And, of course, we've got the typical machlokas about, are we bekiyim in bedikas like this or not? Can we rely on it? If you're an Ashkenazi, you can't rely on anything. Now, what about Simone Chaya? So, what are the Simonin for a Chaya? Now, the Mishnah said Simone Chaya were said in the Torah. So, turn around, huh? Elu ein Simone Chaya. What are the Simonin of a Chaya? What? What do you mean, what are the simonim of a chaya? A chaya and a behemah have exactly the same simonim. We have those simonim that we said. It's malagera, shesa, shesa, mafres is parso. What's your problem? What do you mean, what are the signs of a chaya? Chaya b'chol b'mayim, the simonim. We just said that in the Mishnah. That the simonim of behemah of a chaya are said b'ferish. And that's all included, basically, in the same pasuk. Omer Rebbe Zera, no, what the issue here in the Braita is, how do you identify whether something is called a chaya in terms of chalev? How do you know whether it's a kosher mean for the Mizbeach or it's a chaya? That's what I need to know. So what we're talking about is Lahatir Chelva. So only chalev, which is roy to be put on the Mizbeach, is usr. But the chalev of chayot would be mutter. So it says beferish, kol chelev shor v'chesev v'eiz lo tochel. So if you're sure that this species is not a type of shor, chesev, v'eiz, so then you can eat the chelev. So is there a way that we can definitely identify such a thing? Yes. Kol sheyesh v'karnayim utlafayim. If it's got horns and it has tlafayim, now there's a big machlokas over here, whether tlafayim is a simen of a chaya, and it's referring to a very specific type of split hoof, because the chayot all have these elongated nails at the end, besides the normal mafresis parasim v'shosar shesa. So this would be an actual simen of a chaya, or whether the simen of the chaya was only the horns. And when it says over here, of course, you want to make sure that it's a kosher chaya. So if it would also be mafreses parsa, then it's a kosher chaya. That's a machlokas, whether you can actually view the type of parsa that it has as an active simen for chaya. Let me tell you something. If it's yeshua karnayim, yatatzrich marzorat lafayim. If it's got the correct type of horns, which we're going to see, it can't be usher. There's only chayot that are kosher, if we learn the pshat that this is not a direct semen. It's only a chayot that is kosher that has the correct type of horns. Now, we're going to gradually zero in on what the correct type of horns are. Now, there's one type of chaya that doesn't have horns. and that is the unicorn, because it only has one horn. So if you're wandering through the woods, or the forbidden forest, and you bump into a unicorn, so over there, it's mutter, even though it only has a Karen Akas. But wait a minute, this doesn't make any sense. Goats have horns. Goats have tefillin, and they sure as heck are not chayot. It's a short kesef for aes. Last I heard, an aes is a goat. And it has karnayim and tefillin. And obviously, it's ale of his ulcer because it's put on in his bayah. So what are you talking about? It looks like a chaya. Even according to the pshat that says the tefillin is a specific type of tefillin, a goat has tefillin that are very similar to that. So therefore, your rule is a pretty lousy rule. Ah, we didn't tell you what type of horn it is. It needed to be kruchot. Kruchot means that it's wrapped. What does wrap mean? It means it's wrapped around itself. That is, that it looks like it's layers, different layers. And that means that it can be, you could peel off one piece over another piece and so on. So this is one approach to kruchot. So what Rashi calls gildi-gildi, which of course we used that before in Opus Trefas, gildi-gildi, as Rashi says, is klipa al klipa. So it has layers of keratin in it. And that is not the case of a goat, which is solid. Well, wait a minute, a shor has horns that are kruchot. You said all you need to do is take a look at that horn and that's enough. But that's not true, because a shor has exactly what you just said, the type of horn that's kruchot. So how in the world is that a sinet? Well, you need actually charukot. So what you need is, it has to, remember, the shor is a very smooth horn. And the only horn that is a siman of a chaya is a horn that's got all of these, indentations in it. And that, and if somebody would send some beautiful pictures of different types of horns, that would be very nice, so everybody could share it, even if they don't have the sefer. So it's not enough, therefore, to have the kruchot. Actually, what we need is charukot. Well, wait a minute, then let's go back to the A's. The A's has charukot. So now, at this point, we could have said that you need both, right? The reason that we don't say that, we don't say that you need both, it seems to be an expansion to, oh, Mikey sent a picture. It seems to be an expansion. It's really my Machlokas Rashi and Taisus, but it seems to be an expansion to be able to get us into the next sugya, which is important. Oh, wow. What are you showing us, Ari? Some live horns?
Do these count as fat unicorns, Rebbe?
Ah, unicorns? Great. They're pretty ugly. I thought unicorns were supposed to be pretty. Right on. So what about the charukot? So it's true. So far, charukot to kruchot will be enough, but we want to identify another issue over here. Uh-oh, Ari, you look like you're about to jump. Ari, come back. No, don't do it. Okay, so we also need mefutzalot. And mefutzalot means that they have these branches. Of course, that is similar. Branches are similar to what we find in things like deer. So we need to have mefutzalot. So this is a very strange Gemara, because the Gemara says, well, what about a tzvi? A tzvi does not have horns that are mefutzalot. And its chelev is definitely mutter. So Rashi says, this doesn't make sense. Don't we use the word tzvi to refer to deers? And deers definitely do have branches. I mean, like, that's one of the big signs of a deer. So therefore, Rashi tainas that today it's true we use the word tzvi for a deer. But what it's really referring to over here is something that is what he calls the Steinbock, he refers to. So that's the what he calls the Yael, Rashi says elsewhere. This is, I think, Ibex. Is Barnea there? He knows what they call those those mountain goats, right? Anyway, so that has very beautiful but very, very unbranched. And Tosfos does not like that. And Tosfos says, that's crazy. It brings many rayas from the way that Chazal defined the tzvi of things like its skin shrinks the moment it's taken off, and it expands when it's pulled over. Now, this is the simonim of tzvi, what we call Eretz Yisrael, or it's tzvi because of that. Anyway, Tosfos says it is not a Steinbach, and Rashi's problem is that he misunderstood what mefutzalot means. Mefutzalot does not mean branched, which of course the tzvi does have, says Tosfos. Mefutzalot means that they bend. So they're curved is what it means. So chayot, real chayot, have curved horns, whereas antlers are not curved. Antlers, they actually go straight up. So what do you do about the tzvi, which are not mefutzalot? So Tosfos learns this to mean literally the deer. They don't have any curves in their horns. So therefore, what we really need is chadurot. If they don't have mefutzalot, then they need to be chadurot, or maybe chadudot, as some have. They need to be sharp, or if it doesn't mean sharp, it means, then chadur means that it's sort of roundish. It's the same idea. So therefore, look, we need to know all of these different siman. Some chayot definitely are mefutzal, some are not mefutzal. If it's mefutzal, lo dina velo dayana. There's nothing further to discuss. There is no behema that has horns that are mefutzalot. If they're not mefutzalot, then in order to be sure that you're not mixing this up with the type of goat and so on as we identified before, you need it to be kruchot, which is the gildy-gildy. So you need it to have the different layers of keratin. You need it to be chadurot. And you need it to be charukot, but when we say charukot, charukot doesn't just mean it has grooves on it. Charukot means it has close grooves. Mivla charikayo, they're so close they enter into each other. So it's not like big, wide curves, but grooves that go round and round. And this way that we defined it, Hainu Sveka the Iza the Karkus. Now, the Iza the Karkus is a machlokus later on whether it has a din of Echaya or whether it has a din of Behema. So it does have the type of horns that seem to be of Echaya, but sometimes, then why is it called an Iza? If it's called an Iza, it's mashma that it was known to be a variant of a goat, in which case it would be obviously osir to eat the chela. So those who consider the Iza, the Karkus of Haya, they would say that what you need to have is those two simonim, the kruchot and the charukot, which would include the Iza, the Karkus. But if you hold that an Iza, the Karkus is a behema, therefore they'd have to be very careful and they would have to add the sharp, because that would not include the ease of the carcass. That's how Rashi seems to learn. There's a lot of different ways of understanding the Gemara. That's the simplest approach, and let's take that. So he ease of the carcass, Davi Beresh Galusa. The Beresh Galusa had this ease of the carcass, and they considered it to be a chaya, and they took a whole mole tzana de tarba mine, that is old, tremendous basket full of excellent quality chaylev, and they wanted to eat it. Rav Achoy said, you can't eat it. It's an ace. Rav Shmuel Bereder Rabbi Abo himself went and ate from it. And he said, yes. Similar to Achochmah Techayeh Ba'alea, Mipri Pi'ish Tisba Bitno. The fruits of a person's learning will fill his tummy. And so because I know that this is actually a chaya, and this is what I was makabel from my Rebbe, that gave me a delicious meal of this very high quality fats that nobody else had the guts to eat, and that left me plenty for lunch. Sholchu mitam. So they sent, actually, from Eretz Yisrael, a tshuva about this Iza v'Karkus. that the truth is the halacha is like Reb Shmuel, B'rei D'Rebbe Abu, and he was correct in eating it. But since Reb Achoy said it was us, you can't eat this in front of Rabbi Achoy. And don't go around paskening not like Rabbi Achoy. I mean, after all, Yizaharu Barabeno Achoy, he is Meir Ene Geilahu. Everybody is semach on him for so many issues. And basically, you'd have to persuade him that you're right if you want to actually eat it, even though we know that that's the din. If he argues, it's not correct to eat it. And of course, the halacha is that we don't eat any of these based on simanim. We only eat the chalav of something that we have a kabbalah, is considered to be a chaya. Now, you talked about unicorns. Now, how many people have met up with a unicorn in the forbidden forest? So, keresh, afa pish eilu ala keren achat, mutar. So, Omar Rav Yehuda, you know what the keresh is? The keresh is a sort of mystical kind of animal, which was in a mystical forest, which was called the Bei Eloi. So the Bei Eloi was this magical place which contained all of the, as we say, the Bein Hashmashot type of things. It was a twilight zone forest. And so the Keresh is called the Tavya. It's the type of deer that lives in the Bei Eloi forest. And the tigris, which Rashi says, I don't know what they're referring to, whoever talked about tigresses, but the tigris, well, I mean, that was also Winnie the Pooh. I mean, you could have a tigris, right? So those are also this kind of magical things. And it's the Arya de Bei Eloi. So Omer of Kahana, these things, I mean, you don't want to bump into one of those. Between the two ears of the Arya de Bei Eloi, there are 9 amos. You know how big this thing is? Rav Yosef says 9 amos. That's just between the ears. But you're talking about how long it is? It's like 30 feet long. Shitzer amos avimashre de Tavya de Bei Eloi. It's 16 amos long is that deer. Now that should supply enough venison, even for a South African bride. So the Kesar used to fight all the time with Rabbi Yeshua ben Hananya over these religious issues. So this was the Kesar, referring to the, you know, the polemics that they used to have with the Christians. So he said to Rabbi Yeshua ben Hananya, you know, the Nevi'im keep comparing HaKadosh Baruch Hu to your God, to a lion. So it says, Ayesha Ag, Milo Yira, who would not be terrified by the roar of a lion? And look at this. We've got our very own lion, Ari, and here he is risking his life around lion. He's not so scared of a little lion roar. So you're comparing HaKadosh Baruch Hu to a lion. I mean, it's like, well, it's my Rabuse. What's so great about that? Parashakatil Arye, I mean, even a regular guy on a horse who's in a hunt, he can kill a lion. So Rabbi Yeshua said, what, you think it's talking about a regular lion? He's talking about the Arye de Bei Eloi. That's the lion that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is compared to. Says Caesar to him, I don't believe it. I want to see it. Show me this supposed lion from the Bei Eloi. You guys come up with all of this nonsense. Omale, I don't think it's a good idea. Lo matzit chazitale. You're not going to be able to physically look at it. Oh, yes, says Caesar Ivra. Absolutely, I will see it. And I insist that you show it to me. So, Rabbi Yoshua davened for Rachabim that the Aryeh de Bei Eloi should come to Rome. And so it sets out. Boy, Rachami is actively duchte, and the lion is on its way. So they've got these long-distance radars to warn when the Aryeh de Bei Eloi is getting close to Rome. Anyway, it's 400 parsaot away, and it gives one roar. And from that roar in Rome, all of the pregnant women in Rome and the wall of Rome collapsed. They all lost their children, and the wall around Rome collapsed, this was pretty dangerous. This Caesar still insisted. All right. When it got 300 parasot away, it let out one more roar, Niem kala krina, and that caused all of their teeth and their molars to fall out. That's the difference between kake and shine. The kake are the molars. The shine are what we've been talking about, the front teeth, okay? And poor Caesar was thrown out of his throne onto the ground. So he said, you do me a favor, maybe have it go back home. So Bamtuza mina, please ask God, boy rachmi alay delahad aladufte, it should go back to its place. And sure enough, Rabbi Yeshua was boy rachmi alay miahad alay laasra. So they had other discussions, you know. Omar le, maybe, oh, it's so late, Fezmir. Didn't realize, I apologize. All right, so we'll hear about the other exciting fights between Rabbi Yeshua ben Hanania and Caesar. Caesar learned a lot of great lessons. What do you say, Barnea? This should have brought an end to the Hadrian